Hello and welcome to IMP's AEW Adventure Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. A link is in the description. Read the Social Suplex newsletter. Shout out to Trish and Tim as always, and to every person who has contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the AEW week that was. 30 minutes of my first AEW shows of the year. I had a little ditty watching all Japan stuff. A bunch of the Social Suplex names went over to actually watch the Tokyo Dome show. It appears they enjoyed themselves. But I've just had my little Japan dive over Christmas because I was doing other things not wrestling related. I just used the time of, you know what, in this time where I'm not really sitting down to watch an AEW show and I have to watch all of it, how about instead I watch like 30 minutes to an hour of a Stardom show or something like that. So I've just been in Japan for a bit. So this is my whiplash back to America. I was like, oh, it is nowhere near as difficult as it used to be. Jesus Christ, that Tanahashi Okada match is something special. Just in terms of the raw emotions they were able to pull out of you at that time of need of the retirement match itself. Truly something special. One of those matches that you are just going to remember for a really long time. And then when you come back to watching weekly AEW television, is that first thing in your mind of just like, oh, I've watched something truly special. Will I be able to get invested into weekly US wrestling? Because there's always a whiplash. It was real bad when covering WWE stuff, especially in the Vince era. But my main thing coming back was there was a lot going on. Going through a personal thing as well, which is taking like a lot of my brain time. Was I able to focus? Was I able to get in there and enjoy my AEW week? The answer is mostly more so with Collision. And I thought that would be the opposite of the case because stuff has happened for me personally just after Christmas. I thought I was going to really struggle with Collision. So I was just like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to like focus on this. And by the end of it, I'm just into it. It happens every time with Collision. I don't know how many times I've said this, but I generally thought, okay, I've had some time off as well. A big thing's happened. I'm just not going to be able to focus. I'll try my best. It doesn't matter. Every single time. The number of times I've said, I wasn't feeling Collision when I started it. And then by the end of it, I'm just pumped for Dynamite. I've had a great time. It's happened again. I need to stop saying it's a thing. This time though, I feel like it was big enough where it's like, I probably am going to struggle. Nah, doesn't matter. I got my escape. Collision does this to me every single time. Am I going to struggle watching Dynamite after watching a top tier Wrestle Kingdom? Especially the last two matches. Am I going to be able to get invested in AEW Dynamite? Yeah, it was all right. Relatively easy enough. The whiplash isn't anywhere near as bad. Turns out if you still enjoy the thing that you're covering, it's not going to hit you as hard. There's none of that, oh, why is it like this? I don't feel that when I jump back. So anyway, let's jump on over to Dynamite, which was from a Jim Ross country, man with the hat and the southern drawl on commentary for my first AEW show, 2026. So yeah, I didn't watch last week. And then to get my wrestling buzz, I decided to watch Joshi Wrestling instead. I hadn't watched Dynamite because it aired around New Year's. Unsurprising, quite a few of us here at Social Suplex were doing things. I was one of those. It's why I did the World's End review, because I was like, I can do this one. I'm just busy around it. Anyway, with my ramble over, let's jump on over to Tulsa, Oklahoma for the Jim Ross commentary show. And then we go down to Texas for Collision. But we start off with the AEW Continental Championship Eliminator match. John Moxley versus Shelton Benjamin. A stacked show kicked off with a stacked banger. So let's jump on over to the two bold lads from factions all about hurting people having a good old friendly tussle.
And now, oh, it marks! Balls up on the toes! Two!
A big Benjamin toss to set the tone, flowing into exchanging lampings before spinning to ringside for the ad break and crowd fun times. Mox continues to nail this slot of having a great show opening match, just now with the added stakes of this newly won championship. I didn't think of that when I was making my C2 predictions. Yeah, what if these Mox opening matches he's been doing since he lost the AEW title? What if he does those matches, but with a mid-card belt? I was like, oh yeah, that's actually a nice little addition. Such a perfect arc for his character. I know I've already banged on about it with the World's End review, but genuinely, really enjoyed this John Moxley arc. First half of 2025, wasn't getting it. Other places have been doing all of their like end of year review stuff. I don't keep notes well enough to be able to just quickly look and go, oh yeah, these are my favourite, maybe I should. I know Rich Latt, he gives like a big list. It's going on the list, it's going in the book. Maybe I should do something like that. But I was reminded by other people doing theirs that Revolution 2025 was an incredible show, aside from the main event. I remember that show, I remember the Hollywood ending, and then I go straight to the John Moxley Edge match, just completely forgetting about Kyle Fletcher versus Will Ospreay, completely forgetting about Kenny Omega versus Konosuke Takeshita. Just completely forgetting. Like there was some, that card is absolutely stacked apart from the main event. It wasn't a show of two halves. It wasn't great, then it turned a bit it was amazing apart from one match, but that match was the main event. So I'd completely forgotten that show is actually an absolute banger apart from one match. But since then, like Jesus Christ, the John Moxley arc, it really did start to come to fruition, built to Hangman Page with all of that. And now he's entering 2026 just beloved. And this arc is really well done. But yeah, here Moxley's continue to have these amazing amazing bangers, and I really enjoy him in this spot. Whilst in the background with the Death Rider stuff, you got Claudio just being, he's now becoming the Papa. Papa Claudio, big Swiss daddy, he's coming on now. A new father in contention for the Death Riders. Whilst Mox is wrestling with a title which forces the stipulation to have no interference. So he's not using the Death Riders. I feel like in terms of like audience conditioning, it's a really smart way to get you used to Don Moxley not having the Death Riders around him before any form of split happens. But he's still with his lads for commentary and things like that. Like, occasionally he pops on commentary for the trios match. So he's still there for their matches. He's not completely separated from them. But it's just like little things, because technically from commentary, you are somewhat separated. But the way they had the staging as well for Collision, he's like off to the side of the stage, nowhere near the ring. It's like little notes. Just little notes. It's one of the things I used to bang on about with WWE all the time. Like, audience conditioning and viewer conditioning is a huge part of television and different things. Vince McMahon got it completely warped when he was talking about, he said it in character on TV, but it felt like something he generally believed when he was saying it. But the, you don't like what you think you like, I tell you what you like. It's like, yeah, that's TV language and all that shit, conditioning your audience and all that. And current WWE has done that, where they condition their audience to not care about the wrestling. I remember people analysing would, like, at the beginning of this Trips regime era, would be like, you're doing a lot of these interferences, it'll get a point where people don't care about the wrestling. Oh, well, will you? Look what's happened. I swear that was only said like a year and a half ago. Something in any rapid time that's conditioned their audience to not give a shit about the wrestling. You got Julia getting no reaction to anything. Like, come on. And you come over here to AEW, look what the Continental Classic does. It just makes you focus on the wrestling. The complete opposite. It's kind of what I love about it. All the shenanigans completely away. Your guaranteed wrestling matches that focuses on the wrestling, makes it the centre of attention. Guess what that does to your viewer conditioning? Oh, but little things like here as well. Just having Moxley, he's still part of the group, but you're actively seeing him wrestle without the Death Riders. On the other side of it, this was a night where Shelton just could not hit his spin kick. Like, he tried twice and whiffed it twice, but every other kick, every suplex and bomb, whatever it was, they all looked awesome. It was less you mucked up. It was more just odd. It's like, but everything else you're doing is not just hit well. It looks amazing. For some reason, you just can't hit your spin kick. I don't know what's up with that. Not that the crowd cared though. After the second whiffed kick, Mox hit a stiff lariat and then died of death for a moment for the experience to rest. And a couple minutes later, we got our first This Is Awesome of the night. 5 minutes remain, bed up the tension, very much enjoyed Mox continuing to wrestle under those continental rules. No ringside lads and 20-minute time limit. Catching a kick, Mox nailed the paradigm shift, but to Oklahoma surprise, Shelton kicked out and we got our 1 minute remaining call, going the full 19. One hell of a stiff running knee to a seated John's head, got yet another kick out. Desperate attempt to triangle choke the champion ended in failure. 5 seconds left on the clock and Benjamin lost with Mox just rolling atop and keeping those shoulders down. And Excalibur's on commentary hitting hard on making sure we knew that that match went 19 minutes and 55 seconds, like a note to remember, was repeating it that much, which bodes well for whatever they have planned for Mox's reign. Like, why was it important for Excalibur to drill into us that that was how long this match had gone? It screamed, an idea is happening. Something is forming here. Whether it's as basic as we're going to get a string of long Mox matches and then making sure that we know every week that his matches are going this long, or it's showing that he's being tested properly, or whatever they decide to use this note for, it screams that there's an idea happening. It's nice to see when I'm watching weekly television. It's still feeling fresh in my mind of watching weekly wrestling TV that's not doing any form of that. What do you mean you have an idea so, and you formulate it, you get it properly planned out, and then you slowly have it happen over the course of time to a point where you can then go back and be like, oh, they clearly had this idea because there's notes of it happening here. You can do that all the time back with Hangman's alcoholic arc or the anxiety cowboy. All of the notes were already there. What made going back to that so good? I've always appreciated myself in my wrestling. Got a few other bits on this Dynamite. I didn't note any down for Collision. There was a lot of promo setting on what's going to happen on Maximum Carnage, so I kind of just like, you know what? Even though Josh Alexander had Lance Archer beating people up backstage as he chatted his shit, like, we'll talk about those people when we talk about Maximum Carnage next week, so. But here, AEW got to show actual footage from Hiroshi Tanahashi's final match. Feels like a great win, especially compared to what happened on the WWE show, where their tribute was, in the middle of a match, Io or somebody hit a sling blade. And Corey Graves went, oh, that was in honour of Hiroshi Tanahashi. That was the end of their tribute. That was anything. Like, he wasn't in WWE, so they, in their world, that means his accomplishments don't mean anything in what they present on TV. Like, backstage, the wrestlers will give a shit. But on the screen, in their world, no other wrestling matters. Well, not even matters. It doesn't exist until they bring them into their world. Then suddenly they're this huge thing that's always existed and has always been a big deal, like TNA with AAA. AAA thing, or the marketing with that, I saw over Christmas. It's just ridiculous. I can't remember if I said it on the World's End review. But just that line of, no longer is Lucha Libre a side act. It's like, what? CMLL is one of the most successful promotions in the world. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, in WWE's bubble, that's exactly what they have been, in WWE's world. But in the wrestling world, absolutely not. Like, absolutely not. But anyway, so for AEW to actually show the footage and be able to do that, it feels like it's a huge deal, because the big wrestling thing that in the wrestling bubble is being talked about the most, AEW are able to actually show it and makes it feel like AEW are part of the wider wrestling world. Obviously, it was shown from the framing of Don Callis' family member Okada had a big match in Japan, but you know, still got to show it. Weirdly, they held back all the footage of everybody else involved until the lesser watched Collision. I found that decision odd, unless it's literally just a timing thing. Like, Collision got more promos and time to fill. Dynamite, like, got so much on it already, we can't show this entire package. But I don't know, you had loads of guys coming out, like Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, Jay White. There's a lot of AEW names that came out to pay respects. Katsuyori Shibata, that they all came out to pay their respects to Hiroshi Tanahashi. They were only shown on the Collision one. It felt weird. Like, the whole Wrestle Kingdom promo package was saved for Collision. It was saved for the sickos, rather than the wider Dynamite audience. I mean, I say that, like, I don't actually know how HBO Max has affected that. In my mind, that helps Collision. If it's on streaming, it means that it's way easier to get round to this Saturday show, which will just be there. But I don't know. America's always been weird to me in terms of their viewing habits. I've never fully grasped how their habits are formed. Actually, I say that. I did hear an anecdote from my brother once where somebody was shocked that he didn't watch Gogglebox, on Channel 4, which is a show. It's a show where people sit on their couches and they're watching a thing on television. The camera is from behind the TV and just watching their expressions, and they're all going, oh my God, can't believe it. Oh, what's he done that for? Think like that. And this person was absolutely shocked they didn't watch the show, and their response was, well, how do you know what to watch? And I was just like, well, I guess we're just make sure we're TV news connected through our different means. We've always just known. Like, even before social media, me and my brother would be looking up what US TV shows are coming out. Like, we would stay on the schedule. Like, we knew what was coming out, what we might be interested in. But I found that really funny. Me just saying that I don't understand US viewing habits. But then I found out there are people in our country who find out what to watch through Gogglebox. And I'm like, actually, I don't understand that either. To me, that's wild that that's how you find your television. Mark Briscoe, with his TNT title on his chicken farm, he's feeling physically great, but not mentally great. Because it's been too long, he's itching. Too long since he whooped a man's ass. Hechicero with the Magic Fire Lucha Man next up for the shot, and we got that on Collision. Tekla back from helping out Clark Connors in the Tokyo Dome. Next week, the Spooky Trio will face Stat and the Babes. More of that when we get to Collision. And Darby Allin, his night was spent going around backstage searching for Geordie Pack. When he eventually found him, the Geordie had no interest and refused a match. Like, why would he? He's beaten the fella every time. However, a fire extinguisher and a threat to slam Pack's ankle with a door. Fine then, you prick. If you want it that bad, like, Jesus. Fine, I'll give you the feckin' match. And it sets Darby Allin versus Pack for maximum carnage. I've not really given it the gravitas of maximum carnage. I've more framed it as, God, fine. God. Type of response from Pack. That's how I read the situation. It's like, God, I didn't realise you were so amped about this. Right, I'll just do it. Be that serious. On to the rest of the show. First off, Jack Perry and his mysterious partner, because his partner got injured, versus The Demand. His mystery partners being the returning Young Bucks with full Elite Music Superkick Party presentation, all the way back to the original Elite Superbucks from early AEW, for a wee little bit of six-man fun times. Babyface Bucks are back, baby. And you're telling me this is going to flow into a trios match against Andrade and his big D's, Mark Davis, and the former something, Jake Doyle. Like, yes. I mean, I'm assuming they're going to be Andrade's heavies. Totally in for that. And I love that Mark Davis has this completely unique kind of just feel and persona presentation to anybody else in the Don Callis family. Then in comes Jake Doyle, who is almost represented absolutely identically. It's like, it's just an American version of him. There's almost two identical lads. Such a fun party match when the right people are in them, though, for this. And by the right people, I mean the Bucks. They were straight in there with the fast fists. Perry immediately moonsaulted onto the pile of ringside lads, and we got that reminder of just how fun these trio matches in AEW can be. After the break, we got our Nick Jackson and Ricochet happy times, but the evil Big Bishop and Tower stops us from our fun. How dare. No fear, the second the pair actually got their moment, we were served a springboard destroyer. They know what the people want. Not tuning into Ricochet Nick Jackson for holds and just a little handspring or anything. No, we want the real shit. They know what we're here for. This is awesome, chanted for the second match in a row. Floated to an awesome big strong boy spot as Leona Samoan dropped all three of his opponents on his broad Samoan shoulders. Perry's turnbuckle wall run into the German looked amazing on Ricochet, but equally great was the sequence of a Ricochet knee stun, powerbomb, lifted and twisted onto the shoulder, then popped into a reverse Rana, just so fucking smooth in the way it was executed. Then poor innocent Ricochet ate all of the shit, Doomsday Device, springboard lariat variant. brilliant. BTE trigger and running knee from Perry for the win. After the match, Davies and Doyle jumped the books with the demand keeping Perry down. Jets beat to equal the odds, but then the lights went down, stayed down, and El Idolo finally made his second appearance back in AEW. I did enjoy Tony Khan's reply to the question, what do you make of Andrade appearing on NJPW with the AEW branding? And his response being, bodes well, doesn't it? And then that Wednesday, Andrade returns. The beating down of the books, Don Callis happy times as my wish for this family to just increasingly get more and more numerous becomes true. Like, we are likely to be losing Takeshita from the family, and I know we must mourn. But we simply must not make just one room, but two more additions to make up for that. And he do it before he actually leaves them, so at this point there's even more members. I just love it. Technically Andrade would be the numbers replacement for Takeshita, but the fact that you got Andrade and you got Jake Doyle, so you Hydra do it. I'm just totally in on the idea of Don Callis' family just getting ludicrously large. Just keep adding guys. It's like, it's over. It's working. And with me, the larger it gets, the more over it gets. That's totally it. Onto Willow's TBS Championship celebration with a table full of cake. Ah, Chekhov's cake. We've all watched wrestling. We see cake on a table in a wrestling ring. We know what's going to happen. Holly and Chris out to celebrate with. Right when the lights accidentally went down, having to resort to a spotlight for Willow's monologue. Then one of the commentators forgot to press his cough button. No calling out Jim. Could have been anyone, Jim. Could have been anyone. Willow talked about not having just Harley, but also getting Chris Statlander back as a friend. So the crowd chanted, we want cake. Hey, Tulsa's heard of the rule of three. They just let their stomachs lead them a tad ahead of the gun here. That cake's not meant for you. The actual third thing, an in-mourning Mercedes Moné, came on out with a veil for privacy in a time of need. Willow tried to hype her up, but the lass was not doing well. Flipping the table, were having none of Harley's party poppers. That just innocently hold a tray of cake when Mercedes chipped into it face first. Willow, less innocent, with her gut-wrench powerbomb onto said cake. I was like, hey, Willow. All of that was like jokey. Oh no, it's all going wrong. That's just a powerbomb onto some cake. There's no no friendly hoo-ha about that. Although, back to the friendly hoo-ha, as if we got a conga to Willow's music to end the segment. Mercedes then got a completely unhinged video that played on Collision, crumpled on the floor in front of a standing mirror, just absolutely wailing throughout the entire thing. We may be experiencing a little bit of a broken Monet. Maybe just a little bit. Sammy Guevara versus Bandido. Mustache Kid took his shot against the AEW Championship number one contender Outlaw in his promo, saying, if I take you out, then I'll be number one contender. Not sure that's how that works, but it's wrestling, so sure, why not? Bandido is so great. Sammy's nose busted at one point, but after his dive out, he only got a you still suck from Tulsa. Fun spot with Bandido running the ropes with the 21-20 plex, and Sammy springboarded back off the second rope to meet him halfway across the ring with a cutter, then landed on his feet in the actual 21-20 plex for an offense flurry the crowd were not expecting. Finally earned him that this is awesome, even if that means Tulsa were handing that chant out to literally every match. Sound of a great show, or that Tulsans need to just not hand out this thing so nearly willy. 21-20 plex finally hit on the third attempt, and we got our pow pow fingers guns of victory to camera. Then out came MJF, all congratulatory and praising of his opponent. Oh wait, no, he called himself a Lucha Libre legend for selling out Arena Mexico against Mystico, a bigger star in his opponent's own country, calling Bandido a kid with potential. But he might as well give him over that ring, and maybe MJF will go to Tony Khan and promise a match in 5 years, thinking that was a dig at WWE's current booking of their younger lads. Then had his translator, Ring of Honor's Jonathan Cruz, repeat everything he said in Spanish to make sure Bandido understood. On the second paragraph of the monologue, I can speak Spanish, you stupid son of a bitch. Bandido got a huge pop reaction for that. So MJF kicked him in the dick, but after stealing the ring to punch Bandido, he accidentally rocked the translator. That, oh, we go into mistimed goofy heel. Like, we've seen the rhythm of this so often. But something about Bandido, he just looks cool coming out of it. MJF received a swift dick kick of his own, and 21-20 plex to both of them. MJF limping around ringside to grab his title and get out of there. Segment ended with Bandido all hyped with his ring back. This was like almost like your run-of-the-mill flow for a heel segment like this. But there's something about Bandido where he just came out of that segment being like, oh, that guy's cool. Like, I wasn't thinking, that was just, you know, relatively decent run-of-the-mill. I came out of this segment thinking, oh, I can't wait for the match next week. Bandido's so cool. The fact he can make a segment like this have me walk out of it with that reaction, that is an absolutely great sign. Maybe a tad worried for MJF's actual reign if, like, my negatives for the segment are all to do with him, and it's all to do with his opponent with the positives, but he comes out of it looking cool. Like, is it the fact that it's the two of them working together where MJF has given Bandido a lot here, because Bandido's never going to win that title match, so Bandido comes out looking cool because of MJF as well? Like, he played his part in this. Talking about playing your part, Tony Storm versus Marina Shafir. Also a weekly look-in on the bisexuals, but first, a wrestling match. Marina Shafir used the Death Rider numbers to get on top of Tony. By the time we got our ad break, she was in full mocking baddie mode, dancing with Tony's groggy body like the woman did with Orange Cassidy, just giving her forearm after each move to quiet Tulsa booing. It felt just a little bit naff to a point where I was sure this was during the ad break, because I feel like they do switch up the mics when they are doing the advert to the main show. I don't know what it is. You also will normally get like a swooshing camera transition-y thing panning through the arena as we return to advert. So you know normally when you've been in advert. But it felt like this should have been cool. Marina Shafir is doing the dancing with Tony's groggy body that Tony was doing with Orange Cassidy. It was just not getting much of a reaction. Maybe it went on too long, or just the execution was a bit naff. I don't know what it is. But it did work a treat to get Tulsa booing Marina Shafir and cheering for Tony's amp back up, which cued Yuta and Garcia pulling the referee out during the pin and immediately into the DQ with the commentators like, yep, that should be a DQ. And I'm like, wait, is that a thing? Well, it is tonight, I guess. Wrestling. Yay. Like, in AEW's history, has it ever been a thing where pulling out the referee is an instant DQ? It's the fact that the commentators were instantly on it which made me think they're aware this isn't a thing. They've just made this up. Wait a minute. No. He's the footballer lifting his hands up saying, I didn't foul him, I didn't touch him, instantly before the referee's even blown his whistle. It's like, okay, hold on. I wasn't even critiquing you, but now I'm curious. VAR, did he do something? So my absolute bet is at some point during this year, a referee in AW is going to be pulled out of the ring and it's not going to be an instant DQ. That's my bet. That's my bet. This is only a thing for tonight. The line is up to the referee's discretion, but the commentators were instantly on it saying, oh, that's a definite DQ. That's not referee discretion, because the commentators are the ones being like trying to tell us that this is a definite instant DQ. And basically saying this, being like, I don't even want this to be consistent. I want the baddies to be able to break up a pin by pulling the referee out, or even the good guys, like for tag team wrestling as well, that works such a treat. I want that to be able to happen. So I kind of don't want them to keep to this rule, and I also don't expect them to. So why is it even here? For the convenience of one night to burn one of AEW's extremely rare DQs on this. It's just a bit odd all around. But to be fair, this current storyline is dancing in odd, but more the good kind of odd. Mina Shirakawa completely failed in her save, immediately just kicked in the head and down. Roderick Strong and Orange Cassidy out to make the actual save. With the baddies scared away, Orange pulled up Tony, and then Mina too. Three people, fun times confirmed. All I know is that Excalibur is too shy to actually mention anything. So we move on to the lights out match, I guess. The main event, the Ops, Hook and Hobbs versus Swerve and Hangman. Look out, baddies, Paige is drinking again, but this time not to his own detriment. The bell rings and the lights literally went out for a second time, because it was in the back of my mind, did they go out during the Widow segment to set up something here? And then when they went out seemingly in a odd fashion here again, I was like, okay, no, it's just a fuck up. Something's going on. I'm assuming for Monet's entrance, they might have wanted to do like a spotlight thing, and then it just went all to pot pretty quick. Spotlight Man got his moment to shine for the second time of the night. Instant ringside fun with a chair as our violence gradually escalated. Like, hey, our ad break lead was Hook tossing Swerve overhead on the apron. That looked really cool. In what definitely felt like a match that didn't particularly fit lights out stipulation. Like, I think of something like way grander for lights out. But I swear there have been tamer TV versions before. I just can't name them. But when I think lights out, I think properly violent. Okay, we're doing this. The atmosphere in the arena changes when you do the whole lights out thing. You make a really big deal of it. This was like a much tamer TV version. But it's in the back of my mind that has already been done. Like, this is not the first one. I just can't name them, because maybe like this one, it's not as memorable. During said ad break, the construction o'clock hit with hangers fetching the table, and Hook got his suplex toss to quickly crash Paige through it upon our return to air. No hanging about, right into it. Just get the table bollocks over and done with. Like, got other shit to get into. The crowd would be chanting, we want tables. Let's just do a table spot. Like, feck it. Things like the staple gun had Hook rolling away in agony, but when Swerve did it to Hobbs mid-stalling suplex, it had no effect. Leave that solution to the former teacher proficient with the staple gun. Staple his dick. Yep, that worked. And the bigger other shit item, cinder blocks, strapped to a plank of wood. So heavy it took both Paige and the muscle man Swerve to lift it in. Smartly teased, whoever sets it gets it for a tad, before, yep, Hobbs' world strongest slam to Swerve onto the blocks. Hodge Dojo dweebs attacked hangers and gave Hobbs a chain for pleasant nice times. And that pleasantry included such delights as wrapping the two goodies together with the chain around both necks, so they were tied together and forced to coordinate to get out of it. Up to their feet and lariated every Dojo lad down with the chain. Loved the sequence after, ending Hangman's buckshot caught deliciously into a spine buster. Final big holy shit chant after a dead eye onto the cinder blocks was assisted by a Swerve stomp. Looked brutal in the best safe way. And that left poor Hook all on his lonesome for hangers to wrap that chain around his fist and give the chap who cost him the title a stiff right. Whose house? It is Swerve Strickland's house, my good sir. House call, buckshot, then the chain around the back to hang Hook over the canvas side ropes for the win. Character wise, the story being represented before you in a visual way, all of those kind of things, huge points. Really huge points. You literally had Swerve and Hangman chained together, and they were forced to work together whilst chained together. Like, it's not subtle, but it's the fact they're actually doing it. There's thought put into this shit. We're seeing the story visually represented as well, not just verbally blared at us. But the lights out stipulation was the thing that felt just a little bit tamer, even though we did get a dead eye stomp onto the cinder blocks. It's like, there's something about the lights out stipulation which feels like, oh, these are dangerous men. matches, the atmosphere shifts for a reason. This wasn't that. This was a higher end of violence for a standard no DQ. But the character stuff, well, right up there, like ding ding ding. Maximum points. And that's been my vibe with Swerve and Hangers since Hangman lost the title. It's like, I would have loved for Hangman to continue in that role. But also, I really enjoy what's happening with Swerve and Hangman. Like, is Swerve taking advantage of Hangman being let loose? And also, there's the fact that Hangman not having to be that sheriff with the good morality, it's just like, I'm just gonna beat the shit out of you. I just really like Hangman not being afraid of his darker side anymore, but then also engaging in that high violence. So yeah, good notes. Anyway, let's jump. I've banged on for that for quite a while, so I feel like this recording is going way over what I would normally mean to. A fair bit of rambling. But first one back, you know, when you've not seen somebody for a while, you just end up talking for a little bit longer, just a bit rambling. I feel like I'm doing that. So let's fly on down to Arlington, Texas for Collision. And that Death Riders Trios match I talked about earlier. Pac, Wheeler Yuta, and Danny Garcia versus Scorpio Sky and Top Flight. And Mox on commentary just to spoil me good on my Sunday morning wrestling viewing. No chair for him, though. The man had to stand like he was up in the gantry or giving testimony in court. Come on, give Mox a chair. Come on. Anyway, let's jump on over to Collision.
That's going to be close. Yes, you see.
Come on, Ben.
Verbal tap. Darius Martin said yes.
We ain't going anywhere.
Death Riders.
Just a wee six-man tag ahead of Pac's unwilling, fine then, match with Darby on next Wednesday's Maximum Carnage Dynamite. Buddy Death Riders slowing the pace right down and going all kicky stompy with the occasional speedy goody burst. Scorpio Sky not afraid to pull off a cheeky eye rake to give Dante Martin his hot tag though. Is he going up there for a good dad? That's a good dad move, that is. Required that Cheaty Riders numbers plays a well-oiled baddie unit to swing things back every time. Dante ate all the ad break heat, completely isolated when we got back. But that Darius burst was coming. Rina Shafir and new to Skyflight lady Zeta Steele up on the apron to argue each other back down. After a dive, they just repeated that bit with a spit and ill-timed Yuta push, knocking his own stablemate off. The goodies on top, but the two legal were still Yuta and Darius. With Marina getting her revenge and grabbing the ankle, sending the riders into full Joshi mode, all charging at the poor Martin in the corner. Then Garcia choked the man as Pac and Yuta ran the ropes over and over and over. Not sure Wheeler flipped onto anyone? Like, he ran, then he did a belly flip over the top, and I don't think there was anyone there. It's just like a fancy little, look what I can do. Just showing off the bugger. Pac did land on a lad though. Darius ate shit in the ring and the Death Riders got their win. After the match, Megan Bain said hello with a running Liger Bomb, reminding us that her and Ford are still allies with Shafir. I'm assuming because we get Tony Storm, Mina Shirakawa and question mark. I would love it to be Orange Cassidy. Finish off the match, Orange Cassidy gets powerbombed on Megan Bain. Yes, please. I already know where I want this to go. Sure, they're teasing this stuff by implying that they're in a three-way relationship or something. But nah. Big picture. You're building to Orange Cassidy getting powerbombed by Megan Bain. That's what I want to see. Don't you dare wimp out of it and give us just a six woman tag. Oh, come on, have Orange Cassidy put over the women's division. That's what I want to see. Yeah, speaking of violence, I want to see Brody King versus Jobberman. I didn't catch his name. Not enough time to, really. Woof woof. The match to pair with his promo talking about violence. Sometimes violence is the answer. Perfect quote ahead of the man ending a jobber with a gonzo bomb in under 30 seconds. Crowd got to woof. Man looked like a badass. Job done. More jobber matches, especially when AEW does more than one on a show like this and they all feel different. Yeah, I love this one especially. Bandido all happy on the ramp after so they could plug Wednesday's AEW title match. On to El Clone versus Commander. I didn't watch the New Year Dynamite, so this is my first viewing of Baddy Graham. An epilepsy warning of a screen flickering entrance. Like, maybe not wise to watch it with the lights off, I say to myself, because it was a dark day and I watched it with the lights off and had to look away like, oh fuck. It's blinking at me. The match itself, a good dose of AEW Lucha times. You know, you got to bring Lucha Libre out of the sideshow. So, our Tony Khan, he's doing his part. We all know what Commander can do, but to me, El Clone is still new. As I type that, Commander did a Tornillo spin off the top rope into Ravana, so okay, so maybe that man can still surprise me, because that was awesome. Wheelbarrow lift uppy do onto the shoulders, reverse Rana, good times. A lot of room for Commander to be great. Rope walk just walked away from smart El Clone, but dumb El Clone because he didn't move from the follow-up springboard moonsault. Tilt to wall backbreaker hit on the second attempt. The same for the airplane spin puzzle bomb thing, that's Hologram's finish. First time rotated into a Canadian destroyer to a this is awesome. The portal bomb was hit on the second attempt, but the move before it looked so good. Like, he lifted Commander up, stalled for a driver with both the leg and arm trapped before bombing the man. Flicky lights in Baddie victory as the commentators banged on about how happy Dan Callis must be. A transition into showing a proper Wrestle Kingdom recap from Andrade to Takeshita's loss against Tsuji, Okada's victory, and this time actually showing the AEW names who made the flight to give their respects to the retiring Tanahashi. And yes, on both nights they showed the Tanamobile. I did laugh because Sam Brown messaged me to say that he knew I would love the Tanamobile Batmobile. He knew me too well. Waiting for me to get to that bit. So I started that, because of my freedom over that time, I started the main event about midnight my time, because I had been slowly chipping away at the show. I was like, oh, I've only got the main event left. It's midnight, I'll watch it. So I had to message Sam being like, well, it's 2 a.m. now, and I'm just watching Tanahashi be carted around the stadium. Like, I've just sat here for over 2 hours, and now it's really late at night, and I'm just watching him just be pushed around the stadium in his Tanamobile. But I felt it too. I didn't want to leave the moment. You could tell that every single person in that stadium just wanted to stay in that moment with him. Like, it sounds ridiculous that they carted him around the stadium, but genuinely, that was reading the room correctly. That is what they wanted. Mina Chikawa versus Lady Frost. Hey, Lady Frost. Always nice to see her. Even if she did immediately kick our Mina in the face, or villain baddie. Mina receiving flowers from the ringside crew. No card from our secret admirer. Closer to your AEW style, more competitive jobber match. Frost allowed to front flip into her senton. Cool back heel kick. But at the end of the day, this is Mina time. Figure four leg lock for the win. Who was looking at the flowers? I love whoever that was. I mean, hold on, Mina. It gotta be a little more difficult to win over than that. Whoever gave me these flowers, I love. No. No. Hold off for a second, Mina. Hold off. This is why you've got to be with Toni Storm. She's crazy, but she probably would ask questions about the flowers. I would assume. TNT Championship, Mark Briscoe versus Hechicero. Fair to say, these are two lads with very different styles, and they gelled really damn well together. Both innovative fellas. Just that one's a technical fire magician and the other's a crazy chap from Delaware. Caution to the wind, running blockbuster off the apron. Caution completely thrown out for the Sabu chair step-up dive when Hechicero saved Briscoe by cutting that off. But some people are just too stupid to teach. And I love that about Mark Briscoe. Bang, bang, Foley elbow off the apron, caught in a ringside trap, and the Don Callis magic man rained fire through the ad break. Like, hey, he did try with Briscoe. It's not his fault the man didn't learn to not dive. Hechicero told him through action, if you dive, I'm just going to do something. So don't dive. And then Briscoe's reply was, bang, bang. He jumped off the apron. So he caught him. He's like, I told you I was going to do that. Beautiful transition, popping Mark into the armbar in the ring. But it was the sequence after that perfectly displayed both of their different styles of innovation. Hechicero going to skin the cat, but Briscoe went over him, and Hechicero's legs then wrapped around, caught in a choke. So Briscoe walked to the ramp and just jumped back first onto it. That whole sequence makes no logical sense, but all the character sense with the technical and the crazy. I just loved how it played out. Not learning from before, Briscoe again went for the chair setup dive. This time hit, good for him. In the aftermath, it worsened that arm Hechicero had been working on through the match, leading to him taking arguably the best bump of the fireman's running trapped head scissors thing. Full rotation over his head, looked brutal in the best way. Damage on the arm, but this was where the crazy idiot shone. No care for his own well-being. After shoving Hechicero off the apron, he went for the froggy bow anyway. Not able to pin him right, but no worries after the J driller. Great match. Should be no surprise given the lads involved. Because I don't really think they were going for idiot versus technical magician. Whatever. It's more, they're both innovative, but the way they go about that is different. And I felt like there were so many sequences that displayed that really well. I may have just leaned into the idiocy thing to kind of maybe help emphasize that. High-end Maya World and Vert Vixen versus Babes of Wrath and Chris Statlander. Vert Vixen, all one word, our local Texas lass to join in on the fun against the OP team of champions. Oh, Vert, look great. Like, what do I call you? Do I call you Verti? What do I call you? But she did fit right in as the kind of lass perfect for AEW. Really enjoyed doing this match. This wasn't really a Jobberton affair at all. A genuine competitive match with Harley even being completely cut off at one point after the ad break. Double V even got a spot to kick down an amped up stat. Hot tag Willow finally too much though, and that's when we got our straight flow to the finish. Stat tagged in, double corner fun times, and a meet in the middle for Harley to crossbody. Cool Chris with a handspring front flip that made the crowd go ooh. Saturday Night Fever for Vert Vixen and our champions all happy with the mic. With the mic, you say? Yes, because Tekla was posing like Spider-Man on the announce desk, perched and ready. She knows what it means to be toxic. Chris's response made me laugh, like, we all know how to stand on things and look cool, Tekla. Phrased like a dig, but that's just a straight-up compliment right there, Chris. Oh, look at you, looking really cool. you've just complimented her, Chris. You can't do the mock thing, but then say something nice. And finally, onto the main event, The Demand versus Jet Speed and Anthony Bowens. I didn't see last week's show. Don't know why Anthony Bowens is here. I watched Dynamite, so I was able to piece together why Jet Speed were there. Like, the information came through them running down. Anthony Bowens, though, no clue. Did I just miss them explaining it on Dynamite? That's possible. They always hype the matches and say a lot of words whilst they're hyping the matches, and I don't listen to those words. WWE's conditioned me to not listen to commentators, and that crosses over into all commentary things within sports. Like, if I'm watching football on TV and someone in the room goes, oh, I can't believe you just said that about one of the commentators, I'll be clueless. There's a very high chance that I've just not listened to a single word the commentator said. I'm able to just tune them out, because when I was watching WWE, especially in like 2011, to be able to try to enjoy those shows, you had had to have the ability to just zone out the commentators. And that skill has stayed with me all these years later. This match was a ton of fun though. A party tag of a main event. Knight and Bayley too angry and amped up to wait for their third man. Unwisely jumped the baddies 2-on-3. And they were all taped up too. In Knight's case, heavily elbowed bandaged. Launches to the outside set that up well. With Bowen's fine, Bayley a little slower than normal, but Kevin completely unable to jump himself over the top. Baddy beat down on Bowen's, made sure to wear him down too. Just everything Jet Speed did was impressive as always, but if not in a gear below their usual fast pace. Nice impressive pop-up displayed that too. Going to add bait with the owner, nailing a running senton on the apron after the man had to jump up a second time with Bishop Khan to ring. Bowen's again isolated after the ad break, as all three of the demand ran Mario. Jet Speed eventually into even the odds and giving Bowen's his one-on-one with the dickhead. It's a great sequence of attempted interference and countering. When you thought Ricochet would get his counter, Bowen's jumped to the lad outside instead, and then it was Knight who flew with that awesome springboard forearm. Leona is strong, but it was Khan who dropped with both Jet Speed lads on his shoulders. Back one final time to just Bowen's and Ricochet, a genuine uninterrupted contest between them, with Anthony winning out, if not for the Bishop blind tag. Double chokeslam for the win, and a great visual of Ricochet dead weight off his lad's victory. After the match, Mastercaster came up to help? Question mark. He did not successfully stop the post-match baddie beating on Bowen's. That called out the Don Callis family and sent us into a big old brawl closing the show. The conglomeration conglomerated as the lads from across the night congealed into the one segment sludge. As we go off air. Ah, yes. Another brawl. Another brawl to mix in with the rest of the brawly glue. Cool. I've had such a strong dose of these brawls to end the show that, oh, okay, here's another one. We're keeping all of this amped up for whatever reasons Tony Khan's cooking up for. But other than that, still did a really good job of getting me excited for Maximum Carnage on Wednesday. Sorry, Maximum Carnage on Wednesday. Collision keeps doing that. It keeps having a thing where I look at the card and I'm like, it looks like it's going to be a good show, but like, I'm not like jumping at it to watch it. And then I watch it and afterwards I am jumping at it to watch Dynamite. Every single time it does its job. Even on a week like this where I would definitely think I would be distracted. Like, nah, Collision got my escape. Fully entertained me throughout it. Anyway, this recording's already gone on too long, and as I've already made kind of like abundantly clear throughout this, still kind of struggling for time for a little bit. So apologies in advance if the edit isn't to my usual standard. But normally I can't not leave it at this point. it eats at me. I would rather be editing till past midnight to actually get it out fully edited than release it like not fully edited. Compared to when I started here at Social Suplex, if you go to like some of the first episodes, definitely like the entire second half of an episode wouldn't be ever edited. Like it wouldn't be done. But now it feels bad in my belly. And like I can't leave it. It's not that I want to do it, it's I have to. That's always a good state to be in, right? I can't not release this fully done. It can't happen. Anyway, with that self-introspective moment over and done with, I'll be back this time this week to talk about Maximum Carnage and whatever Collision is. Does Collision get a tagline? Is it just Collision? Talk about Pac and Darby Allin and MJF versus Bandido, which I'm sure are going to be two great matches. So with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, and engaging in any form and in any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. If you've not given the lads a little chip in to listen to the FOH, go over and do it. It's in the description down below. I kind of need to temporarily add that to the start of my list instead of here. It makes no sense here, but it's 2 weeks, 2 times in a row I've left it here, so it's here again. So with that, I bid you adieu. Ta-ra, ta-ra.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.